Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. Bienvenue, welcome to JCB Live in the heart of beautiful Napa Valley tonight. We have an enormous treat for you. The treat of the year, an incredible lady, an amazing inspiration, a great aspiration to be, born in America in the beautiful town of Maine. Went to college, studied literature, of course, and performing arts. Exported herself on the other side of the Atlantic to go to the UK. And there, life started again with a new phase, playwriting and bar management, to buying wine for a great organization, to then mastering the master of wine, of course, and becoming one of those illustrious members of that closed, phenomenal society. After that, of course, Rank Wine, Judge Wine, wrote a lot about wine, wrote a book in between, and joined as editor-in-chief of the Wine Advocate. Dear friends, this lady is extraordinary. She can taste more wine than I could drink, certainly, in a year. And she is extraordinary. So use tonight as this amazing inspiration, as a path to follow. And if you want to be like her, it's easy. Just be very attentive. Because in life, everything is possible. Lisa, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Voila.
Thank you. What an intro. Well, I didn't need to say anything now.
So Lisa, this is the tradition. We start with this lovely JCB to welcome you in the world of the live. So thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, I never would wait for too long. So, dear friends, we've had an amazing relationship with Lisa. As you all know, she ranks wine, but even more importantly, she has an incredible history. So, Lisa, many friends today are with us because they want to learn how they can become you. So, no.
It's a long, terrifying bow.
It's an exciting one. So how do you study from playwriting and literature to become, you know, in charge of a wine bar and then move from there? How does that work?
It's a good question because I think, you know, when I started studying, I didn't even know the job I have now existed, wasn't even on my radar. I wasn't even that interested in wine when I started college. I grew up in Maine, which is a state, not a town.
That's right. Well, it's both because in Maine, you know, it's one of the most beautiful states.
It is. Yeah, it's very, very rural, but there's not a lot of wine there. You can possibly bit of spinifera there. So somebody will come back and say, I'm growing it.
But there's a lot of sheep and goats.
There's a lot of, yes, it gets very cold in the winter. That's the challenge. And, you know, with the sub-zero temperatures, a species like Vitis vinifera would not last for long. Yeah. Coming from that background, I went to college, Colby College in Maine. I studied what I loved, which was literature. I loved reading, you know, ever since I was very little. I gravitated towards books mainly because there wasn't anything else to do in Maine.
And you have a very intellectual mind. I could see philosophy, literature being, you know, inhabiting.
I loved stories. I loved storytelling. I loved writing. I loved reading. I suppose that's the key message in everything that I've done to get to where I am today is that I've always followed my heart and I've always done things that I love. From the get-go in college, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do with
it. But how did you end up from literally studying playwriting in a great place in London to then managing wine bar? I mean, how does that work?
Well, that came about by needing to pay the rent.
Okay. And wine helps.
Playwriting doesn't pay very well, at least in the initial stages. And it's very difficult to sort of crack in there. I had a few plays being produced on the fringe in London.
But congratulations.
Well, yeah. Wow. But I needed an income. And so a friend of mine was managing a wine bar in London. And he said, well, you can work part time at the wine bar. Okay, yeah, no, that would be, fun. It's better than a pub, pulling pints, which I've done.
That's for sure.
So, I went and started working wine bar, and I started, learning a little bit about wine. And the more I learned, the more fascinated I got, I guess, because, it appealed to me intellectually a little bit like literature did, a little bit like, studying Shakespeare and mm-hmm. also performing arts I studied. So I really love the geekiness of wine.
Yes.
But I also love the stories behind the wines and how, the more that you learned about wine, you could unravel a story right there in the glass. And for me, that was intriguing. That kind of opened my eyes. And so when the opportunity came up to be the manager of that wine, I was like, I completely bluffed my way through the interview. It was,
and you said you already knew wine. Did you?
I did.
Were you already drinking a lot of wine, or was it?
No,
kind of
it was a very new thing. I just about knew that there were three colors of wine.
That's great. You see, everything is possible. Now, were you tempted to write a play on wine? Because I'm sure your imagination was going crazy for ideas and playwriting.
You know what I wanted to write was a sitcom. I thought, particularly managing a wine bar, I was at the wine bar. I wound up being at the wine bar for about 6 years. And being at the wine bar, it was this, in Pimlico, it was underground in the basement. It was mostly for, wealthy people who lived around that area. This is, near Westminster. It also, we had people coming in from Scotland Yard because that was just down the road, the Houses of Parliament. And so you had all these characters coming together and it was hysterical. I mean, some of the people that you got coming in, it was a little bit like Cheers in London because we knew everybody.
And it would be still a great show. So maybe that's the next thing you
do. There you go.
So now how did you go from managing a wine bar to then really getting a full-time career in wine, right? That was the springboard to it?
Yeah, well, it's after bluffing my way through the interview and saying I knew a lot about wine and I could, really handle this job, I had to sign up for WSET classes so that I could, walk the walk as well as talk the talk.
Yeah.
So I straight away started studying at the Wine and Spirit Education Trust in London, which was great because they still provide this ladder. And so I started at the bottom with the certificate and I worked all the way up to the diploma.
Impressive.
And then, by that time, I had actually left the wine bar by the time I got my diploma. And I was working for a very fine wine merchant, Horney & Vera.
Of course.
In London, doing on-trade sales.
Yeah.
And really getting a palate for the good stuff by now.
Well, and I love that because someone who writes about wine, who actually sold wine and bought wine in a bar. Now, when did you realize, Lisa, that you had a true sense of taste and flavor and you really got it?
Well, I knew I had a good nose. I always had a good nose. Yeah. Even as a child, I pick up things,
Were you smelling anything?
Yeah. I used to spend a lot of time in the woods because like I said, in Maine, there's not a lot else to do. And, smelling the different, flora that was there, flowers in the kitchen all the time, a lot of home cooking. And then you pick up aromas and you're able to name all those aroma compounds. You know what cloves smell like, what lavender smells
like,
you know what mint smells like. And so once you're able to isolate and remember those aromas, it becomes very easy to unravel the story in the wine.
Mm-hmm.
When you know certain grape varieties give up certain aromas, when you know that certain regions have different profiles. And for me, that was the fascinating thing that kind of made me want to go on and do the Master of Wine, which of course is, you have to go through this very rigorous exam.
This is like incarceration, right?
Yep.
You have to be in one room for many, many years in order just to focus.
You do.
In fact,
I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I started the Master of Wine. I thought,
Dear friends, this is the big deal. This is beyond Harvard double PhD here. This is the impossible to achieve. How many graduates a year?
I think we're just over 300 now. No, not per year.
Per year is 20.
About 20.
Very prestigious. So when did you realize, okay, I'm going to go further than WRCT. I'm going to go really for the big one.
It was about that time when I was, learning more. The more you sort of work your way up the fine wine ladder, when you start, you know, really isolating regions in your head and, you know, even producers and single vineyards and really sort of honing in on those nuances, it just makes you hungry for more. It's like, you know,
hungry or thirsty?
Thirsty as well.
I like thirsty.
But, you know, your brain is hungry for that intellectual stimulation that you get, you know, when you're learning all of these things and when you're able, you have this ability, this developing ability. And so it's like the ultimate challenge for yourself to be able to sort of put yourself almost like Olympic training through this training to get to this point where you can do this blind tasting exam over a period of 3 days, where you're having to say everything from the grape variety to the region to the quality, all of these, vintage, the potential to age, all of these things. You need to be able to do that without knowing anything about the wine.
Which is amazing. So how many years did it take you to do the Masters of Wine?
About 5 years.
Which is quick. Because many people go 8, 10, 12, 15 and still fail, dear friends. So is it the time you got into a romance in the UK, maybe?
You know what? I want to get to that emotional side. I'd had one romance already in the UK. That was kind of what pulled me back when I graduated from college in Maine. And then I decided to come back and pursue playwriting in London. I had one romance and then that one ended. And then, so when I was managing the wine bar, that's when my true love, who I'm still
with today,
my husband amazing, walked in. Yes, he actually used to work for me.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Nothing better than slaving your husband.
I know.
Or future husband.
I never let him forget that. So, yes.
But it's interesting because he's in another world. He's in finance.
He's in finance. He was just about to go into finance and he needed an in-between job, which is why I was kind of reticent to take him on, actually. He was a friend of my assistant manager. And he only wanted the job for a few months until he started working at one of the major banks in London. And I was, no way. We're not training somebody up just for a few months so he can sod off and become some banker.
See, she's tough. Well, you never know. You may need a loan later.
Anyway, so he comes and starts working with my assistant manager on his shifts. I said, he only works your shifts. You can be responsible for training him. And then when he goes, whatever, and, no special treatment. And then one night, I think just about all of my staff phoned in sick. And it was Friday night and we were packed and I needed somebody. And so I said to my assistant manager, can we call that guy that you've got working with you and see if he's available?
Did you have a little crush on him already?
No,
not at all.
Not until that
night. He's watching. He's with
us. Probably. But he came and he saved the day. And we got through the night and then I got talking to him afterwards and found out we had a lot of common interests. And
that was the beginning.
Boom.
That was what, 17 years ago?
Yeah,
we were married.
Well, no, longer than that, because we were married in 2000 and we met 3 years before that.
So he went through that whole Master of Wine insanity training.
Yeah, he did.
So show us how you use the Master of Wine. Would you describe this in 3 words?
Oh,
I want to see everybody witnessing the movement of the arm. Did you notice that with a passion glass?
The swirling.
So you swirl.
I do that
in
with
counts.
Water now.
you do it not in clockwise, you do it counterclockwise, right? Did you notice?
I know. Do you know what? I'm ambidextrous. I can do it both ways. Oh. And you know where I learned that was in Japan. I was told when I was in Japan and I was teaching at a wine school there by one of my students that it's rude to swirl the wine in the direction of the person who's sitting next to you because you could splash them with the wine. And so you must, swirl it in the right direction.
That's, I did not even know.
So I became ambidextrous, or I guess, you know, be able to do the swirling in both directions.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be rude. So swirling the glass. I do it in my sleep. I do it to water glasses. I do it to my daughter's milk. I do it to everything.
When you professionally taste, do you do it that much? When you professionally taste, not that much?
Yes, you have to. You have to release those aromas, because otherwise, if you just have the glass sitting there and it's not moving, then aromas are just like, you know, they're not volatile.
Yeah, for sure.
They're not leaping up in your nose and telling you what they want to say. So yes, definitely give it a swirl. With sparkling wines, you can kind of get the froth going, so it's maybe not as you know, good to do. But it's got a nice toastiness to it, doesn't
toastiness.
It? Yeah. And the red fruits, raspberries, and wild strawberries, and
so you know, this is Burgundy Pinot.
Mm-hmm.
Something you love too.
Mm-hmm.
So now, thank you for those kind words. But Lisa, tell us, how was it then to migrate from the wine bar to becoming in sales? And then did you become a buyer after that?
I did. I moved to Japan. Well, my husband was meanwhile working his way up and up and up the ranks.
Yes.
In the banking world.
For sure.
And his dream had been to be a trader, a bond trader. And so he was given an opportunity, he was working for a Japanese bank in London at the time, and he was working back office, basically, doing compliance.
Mm.
And he was given his big break. And he said, look, we'll give you a chance. We've got an opening in Japan at our head office in Tokyo to become a bond trader. Are you interested? And so, he came back home, and here I just started at that time. I started working for, a distributor of Veuve Clicquot, Krug, and in fact, it was owned by LVMH and Baron Philippe Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing sales and marketing for them, for some of the best brands in the world. And I had this dream job going in London. My husband came home and he said, you know, I've been offered an opportunity to be a bond trader in Japan. And, you know, and I said, you got to go for it. We got to go.
I love it. Right away.
No.
You see the sense of entrepreneurship and adventure.
And then the next morning I woke up and I went, I don't know Japanese. I've never been to Japan. I don't know anything about
it. Was it your first time in Asia?
Yeah.
Because then you started a big journey in Asia.
A huge leap of faith for me professionally, because, you know, I was never going to be someone who didn't work, who didn't pursue a career. And so I knew that, you know, even when I moved to Japan, you know, not working was not an option. I went and had interviews with some people that I knew, you know, in the wine industry. The great thing about the wine industry is it opens doors everywhere.
For sure.
You know, because it's a...
And even as a lady in Japan, because it's not always easy, now it's much more open, but it was a few years ago. Was it okay to...
Yeah, it was. And part of it had to do with my unique skill set. And this is, you know, how I presented myself to people is saying, you know, look, I've worked in many areas of the wine industry now in London. And I think that, you know, I have this unique skill set where I can bring things that I've learned in London and make some work here in Tokyo to help better, you know, buy and distribute.
How could you say no when it's presented that way?
Well, exactly. And, you know, again, somebody called my bluff and there I was, you know, so I kind of landed on my feet. I started working as a wine buyer for a wine importer in Japan. And that was a lot of fun. I got to go to Burgundy a lot because I love Burgundy. I was buying a lot of Burgundy, Bordeaux, Italian wines, a lot of Australia, New Zealand did very well in Japan as well, or still does very well in Japan. So it was fun. I got to travel a lot. And this really helped because I was, you know, getting set to take my MW exam at this stage. So it gave me just a little bit more access to all of the wines of the world that I needed to taste. But also it got me traveling to all of these vineyards on buying trips so that I could, you know, in the written part of the exam, the theories, you have to use a lot of examples.
For sure.
Very specific examples.
So then you got the Masters of Wine. That was in 2008.
Yes, when I eventually got it. In fact, by 2008, I was just moving to Singapore.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was just starting to work for Robert Parker.
Well, before we go there, which is so exciting, is Lisa, you move for your heart, your first love, to London. You meet your husband, gets transferred in Asia. Then you are in Asia for love. You follow him. And then you build an amazing career on your own. Pretty impressive. So you know how to bounce back very well.
Yeah, but I think it's all about, you know, you don't know where the opportunities are going to come from. You just need to sort of, you know, I think, like I said, from the very beginning, follow your heart. And,
yes.
And it, you know, the opportunities, they come. And they might come in the weirdest packages sometimes.
But how did you get, yeah, for sure. Now, how did you get attracted to basically write about wine? Because selling wine and buying wine for an importer is one thing. You know, you write for the internal team, you write maybe for the customers. But how do you do that?
Well, that was the fun part, because I think that was when my life really started to make sense. It came full circle. You know, I'd always been interested in reading and in writing, and to be able to use all of those skills with the English degree, with the performing arts degree, with the playwriting, with everything, the creative side, the storytelling, and to be able to bring those back, you know, and use them with my wine career. It was like those two worlds coming together.
Do you actually believe in destiny? Big question.
No, I think that there's an element of destiny, but I think that you sometimes you help to shape your own destiny.
That's right.
Yeah, by the people that you become, you know.
And did you have that
split personality? But well, referring to myself. And
no, but I love the balance between performing arts, writing, and then you come back, as you said, to one of your first love, which is writing about wine. So how did that work to start with Robert Parker? I mean, how does that function? Because for everybody knows the Emperor of Wine, Robert Parker, he is obviously managed his own program by himself forever. Mm. So for him to bring someone in as a member of the team must have been very, very difficult for him. And furthermore, you saw a way. So how did that work?
Well, Parker was at a stage where he had already brought in a few other reviewers to work for him. So I wasn't the first outsider that came in. I actually met Parker back in the early 2000s when I was in Japan. He came and he was doing a tour, doing some events in Tokyo and in Japan. And I'd been tasked as the wine buyer for this company to source some wines that he was interested in selling at these events. And so that's how we initially met, you know, and I was helping him out with the organization behind the scenes.
Oh, you were? Okay. So you met and saw how you tasted, obviously.
It was, you know, not exactly smooth sailing, but, you know, I had all of these preconceptions about who he would be. You know, I'd met a lot of, you know, wine journalists and wine critics in London. I knew what they were like. There were some big egos, big egos.
For sure.
And so, you know, I had this idea in my head that you know, Robert Parker was going to be like them, but on steroids, you know, like really sort of like demanding and egotistical. And I could not have been more wrong. I mean, he is the most humble, down to earth, you know, gracious person.
Extremely impressive in that sense.
And you know, one of the things that I really liked about him straight away was the fact that, you know, he listened to me. Here I was, this little nobody, you know,
nobody, someone with a lot of experience, and you went around the globe too. I'm sure that perspective was important. Traveling, right?
Well, I guess,
cultures.
But you know, really, I was a nobody.
And, so, how did he ask you to write?
Well, we stayed in touch, and when the opportunity came up, and he had an opening, first he wanted me to write for a little blog on the website about what's happening in Asia, the Asia wine scene, and then when some regions came up, and he had an opportunity, it just so happened that I was moving to Singapore. As he was looking for somebody new to do Australia and New Zealand, and the proximity helped a lot as well. So, you know, obviously I leapt at the chance. I was like, yes. and doing Australia and New Zealand, I mean, I don't know if you've been, most amazing country.
For sure.
You know, just.
Well, and for everybody to know, the first time I met Lisa was at a fabulous wine advocate seminar you did in Napa. And I was in the room as a person very interested in the subject. That was Australia. And you were amazing. And I went to introduce myself because I said, not only she knows how to write about wine, but she knows how to speak about wine, which is obviously two different things. Now, to your success, of course.
Cheers.
Controversial question. What do you think about ranking in wine?
Ranking in wine is something I have to do every single day.
I know. You did that as a wine bar. You did that as a buyer. So in those days, were you ranking wine with points? Were you doing hearts? Were you doing stars?
I was. When I was working in Japan, in fact, my employer asked me to use the 100-point scale. So
really?
That's where I became comfortable with it. It was hard because you come from a stage when you're, you know, a newbie to wine where you, ranking is just something that's like this, you know, hazy concept. Why would you even want to do it? To, you know, okay, we need to start to get very specific about where this sits qualitatively next to its peers.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, for that alone, it is an incredibly useful tool. You can't use it alone.
That's right.
You need to have a description of the style and the character of the wine as well.
Do you always have the same discipline as you taste? When, in other words, you know, for me, I rank all our wines we make on 20. Mm-hmm. So I rank all
You're
the way up to
You're still on
four.
That 20-point scale?
Well, it's Alexis Lichine. Max Ligley's, you know, the old French school.
Yeah, I know.
Where we have five
parents. I used to use the 20 points.
Yeah, that's right. So explain, maybe share, if you don't mind, a little bit about what's your intellectual process on how you rank a wine and how you do it, in fact.
Well, you know, before you even consider ranking wine seriously, you need to build up a huge mental library of wines in your head. You need to hold in your head all of these wines that you've tasted before, tens of thousands of wines, because basically whenever you give a score, you're evaluating this wine against
That's right.
Of those other wines. And usually you narrow it down to a peer group. Say you're tasting a Napa Cabernet. And you've got, you know, Bordeaux in your mind. Maybe you've got, you know, I don't know, Margaret River. You've got, you know, all the great Cabernets of the world in your mind. And you've also got a bigger picture of red wine in general and wine, you know. And when you're considering, you know, very carefully where that fits, you know, is it a 95? Is it a 98? Is it a 92? It needs to slot in with all of those other wines that are of that score very, very neatly.
That's right.
That's the beauty of...
And you obviously do that very well. It's like,
you have to be quick, too. Yeah. You have to be quick. And that's why it helps, you know, if you've had a job before where you've been using the 100-point scale, because really sort of getting into your
But
head.
On your 100, you slice it 20, 20, 20, 20, 20 in fives.
No.
So you multiply by five, the 20.
We start at 50.
The 24 and 10. Okay, you start at 50.
You get 50 just for being alcohol made from grapes.
Okay. Well, that's a good start. God, I wish my studies, I started at 50.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have F all the time. But now, Lisa, spending time with you tasting, because this is really great because we get to sit down and we don't see what you write, but I look at your mind, you have an incredible memory. So how do you, and I always noticed women, meaning my mother, my lovely wife, and others, have incredible olfactive memory. Mm-hmm. En français, la mémoire olfactive. And we say women.
Ooh, you got phrase for it and everything.
Yeah, women typically are all the medical studies superior to men on that. How did you practice your memory? Because you remember a wine that you've tasted the same year at the same time. And I'm very impressed in that. So what advice do you give and how do you practice that memory?
Well, it's what I do with my daughters now. And I, I'm not just for wine. I mean, yes. It's not a skill, you know, just if you're thinking about a wine career. I think it's a great life skill to have.
Yes.
To have a scent memory. And, you know, I do encourage people because we know that, you know, your scent memory is very closely located to where you retrieve, for example, a foreign language from that you might learn in your yeah. mind. And young people from a very young age are much better at taking this information in and, you know, locking it away into long-term memories. So the sooner you can get young people
yes.
smelling things. So I, to my daughters, I'll walk into a room and I'll smell something. I'll say, what's that smell?
Yes.
And I'll say lavender, roses, great. Lemon.
Do you guide her to say, because my grandmother used to do the same. She forced me to write on a piece of paper, the orchard, so fruit, a vegetable, a flower, and overall a scent. And she would say, Jean-Charles, give me 4 ideas and then you can try the wine. Are you doing that with your daughter as well?
I don't do that. No. I think, you know.
How old is she now?
Well, I've got 2 daughters. I've got one that's just turned 15 and one that's just turned 6.
Yes.
So and for the 15-year-old, she's actually got a very good scent memory. And that's something that I used to do with her from when she was very young. And actually, I think it gives her a much better palate, you know, even mm-hmm. food. She's very, very good at cooking and analyzing dishes and knowing the ingredients that are in those
wow.
dishes from doing this.
You have a future chef.
Yeah, I hope. That'd be nice.
Now, you mentioned something very important, which I've witnessed you obviously do. You go fast. Mm-hmm. So you said from your mind to paper, it's a quick process. So what's your process? So you smell, you taste.
That the master of wine was genius for doing that, actually. It makes you very fast.
Okay.
So you need to sort of be able to analyze a wine very quickly. And sometimes, you know, you get a great wine in a glass. This is a great wine.
Thank you.
You get a great wine
yes.
in a glass. And you know that you need to take a little bit more time over it because there's more to unravel in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get quite a simple wine. There's not a lot to say, you know, and you never, I always say to the reviewers, you know, when we're talking about the process, you don't make things up, you know.
That's right.
If it's not there, don't talk about it, you know.
But I love your choice of words as well. So how do you process from your ranking to the words and you tie them together? Because you told me once you don't go back to your notes that much.
No, I try to write them as complete as possible. So there
wow.
might be like a spelling mistake or a typo or something
yeah.
like that. But I write them as complete as possible. I really don't have time to go back and
yeah,
edit.
For sure.
You know, we just need to get the report out and move on. One of the big things for us is that the reports need to be timely as well, because they need to come out either just as the wines are hitting the markets or before the wines are hitting the markets so that people can make buying decisions. Doing it quickly is essential. But once you've tasted so many wines, it does. I swear I write tasting notes in my sleep.
So to give all our friends a sense of how many wines at the most you could taste in a day, how many is that?
Oh, you know, you can write I have analyzed, judged 200 wines in a day. Oof. When you're doing wine judging. When you're writing
That's
tasting notes, it's different because your brain needs to get around writing all
yes.
of this analysis down. And, you know, more than palate fatigue, I think you get brain fatigue. Your brain gets tired of essentially translating what you're tasting in the glass into words on the paper.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. And you feel so for me, I try not to. I mean, if I'm really busy and I've got like a really busy day, say, I'm doing the Bordeaux primers and you have to pack a lot into maybe
yeah.
a 2-week trip and you're boom, 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 boom. Then you might, you know, in one of your big tastings do up to 150 wines in a day.
Which is so much.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And some of those wines I do, you know, if I don't feel like I got a good sense of the wine, then I will come back to it. And that's a good thing, I suppose, about, you know, if you're in the region, you're in Bordeaux, you can always swing by that chateau again or ask a merchant or a negotiator.
To bring you samples.
Yes. Yeah.
So now you did something quite amazing in 2015. And I'd love for you to tell us about it because you wrote a book.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Well, it's
exciting. Nobody's read it, though.
Oh, you did. Oh, I doubt that. you did many amazing things.
Did I give you a copy yet?
Not yet.
Oh,
but
man.
Maybe I have one.
I will give you several copies. I'm
well,
so
you're
going
to have to sign one so we officially frame it.
Yes, yes.
Because it's a book which is very unusual and not many people obviously can write it because it's from your perspective as a wine critique. So explain the book to everyone.
Well, it's a very personal journey, I suppose, but it's also something that was important for me to get down for myself on paper. It's about wine quality.
That's right.
So it's all about the elements of wine quality and exactly how those can be recognized in a glass. And it gets a little bit technical in places, mm-hmm. Probably gets a little controversial in places.
For sure.
Particularly when I talk about wine faults and that most wine faults that we have exist within this sort of gray area, whether it's good or bad.
Yes.
Just about every wine that you taste has a fault to some level, whether you can detect it or not, you know, whether it's above that detection threshold.
Yes.
You know,
of course.
Volatile acidity. You know, there are acceptable, undetectable levels of volatile acidity in everyone.
Yes.
So, you know, it gets a little bit technical about mm-hmm. things like that. But then I think it also goes a little bit philosophical in areas.
Yes.
You know, talking about the Zen of wine.
Well, which I love because your choice of words, you know, Lon, a good friend of ours just mentioned, you know, the words are important.
Hi, Lon.
The words are important. And it's very true. You take your background in literature and obviously the arts really help you as well to translate a score into words. Because I read words more than a ranking.
Yeah.
And
oh,
I get
yeah.
passionate about
you
words.
You should. You know, really, you should read the words first and say, ooh, yeah, that's the style of wine I really like. Or I don't even, no, that's not for me. That's not my style of wine. But, you know, the words will tell you whether you're going to like it or not.
That's it.
You know, and then you can look at where it ranks next to its peers for that, you know, style.
That's right.
So basically, you know, you want elegant, fresh, perfumed, complex wine that is, you know, a 95 point experience or 90, it also depends on what you can afford.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Correlation to price.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes. But we don't look at prices at all when we're doing the rankings, when we're doing the descriptions.
Yes.
You know, everybody is on the same playing field when it comes to that.
So talking about playing field, where do you see today this wonderful world of wine critiques, wine ranking, within all the new context of social media and people as well aggregating comments from consumers and all that? What is your view? I've never asked you that question. I always wanted to.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I mean, it's a question we ask ourselves a lot,
yes.
You know, as a critical publication, because now, you know, there's so many websites where, you know, people, consumers can come together and talk about their wine experiences.
That's right.
And I love that. I think that's great. We are there to provide, you know, an expert's opinion. Our given all of the wines that we've tasted, all of the expert experience that we've had in our careers, and to say, you know, this is how we consistently describe this wine, and consistently, because consistency is everything.
That's
what
we look for.
And then, you know, we do this as a full-time job. We taste a lot of wines that, you know, we don't recommend.
Yes.
You know, and we say that in the tasting notes as well. There are negative reviews
for
as
sure.
well as positive reviews. And, you know, we kiss a lot of frogs so that you guys can find a prince or a princess.
But that's fantastic. And I think it's very healthy for any worlds in general to have organization and great wine critiques or food critiques to keep you in check and balance. You know, it's the same with, I always say, with the organic certification and biodynamic certification. I love them because they come and audit and tell us what we've done right and what we could improve. And life is about improvement.
Yeah.
You know, if perfection was found. Now, always, the key challenge for people is wine is subjective. Wine is so subjective. How could you say it's worth this and that? How do you react to that comment? Talking about subjective, I love
it. I think, you know,
wine, I'm going to go for
again,
it.
The more professional you become and the more you rank, go up the ranks of expertise and experience in these things, you know, you do learn to put your own preferences aside. I give a lot of very high scores, and I've even given 100-point wines to ones that, you know, I personally wouldn't buy, not interested in drinking. It's not about that.
That's great to hear.
It's about accurately describing that style of wine and saying this is a perfect, flawless example of this style of wine. And you know, this is some of my favorite wines are not the highest scoring wines.
Yes.
Those are the ones that I go for another glass of at the end of the day, end of a tasting day. And you know, really that, again, going back to the tasting notes, that's what it's about. People, you know, can look through those. And I work very hard to describe very accurately what people can expect, not just in a technical way, but also the personality of the wine. I think it's very interesting to bring out that personality of the wine.
Yes.
What does it evoke for you when you taste it? You know, what do you think? And, you know, so many times people will read the same description, you know, when they're tasting the wine, they're like, yeah, I see that. So it's almost the job of the tasting note as well to bring something a little bit more to the experience.
I love it. Very well said. And I commend you for that, because, you know, you really not only have that within you, and at the same time, you transcribe it in such a way that is very compelling. And well, let's have a toast to this.
Cheers.
I chose this wine because I think you are exactly that, a knockout.
Oh, cool. I
typically use it in boxing, but I'm really impressed by your path, because I deal tremendously with people in the trade with great ability, but I love how you've navigated from, you know, arts and literature to evolving arts to do the masters, to do now the wine advocate, to writing your own book, which I think many people should get, you know, and we'll post the book so everybody can really obtain it, because I think it's
available on our website.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And then my big question is, as I look at your incredible history and chronology of life, what makes you who you are today?
Ooh, you know, it's
no question submitted before. It's on the spot.
You know, I think that you know, it is everything. You know, the great quote is, you know, we are the sums of all the moments of our lives.
That's a good quote.
And you know, I think that there is an element of that. Like I said, you know, that moment when I was given an opportunity to come full circle and bring, you know, my love of literature and writing into my love of wine, and to bring those together was just, you know, wonderful.
Yes.
And
where did that come from, do you think? Within your upbringings, within your education, within, you know, I mean, who would have thought, right, from Maine to where you are now? Is there anything that you think defined that?
Nope. Did not see that happening. Did not see it coming.
I love it.
You know, and I think that that's the thing, you know, sometimes you can get too blinkered, you know, into sort of thinking, no, this is what I have to be. This is where I have to go. That opportunity over there, I don't see that, where that's going to take me. And sometimes you do have to take that leap of faith and say, I have no idea where that's going to take me. But it seems like a really good opportunity. And I'm just going to go for
it. That's brilliant. Wow. So what inspires you?
What inspires me?
Besides wine, of course. We hope it still does.
It does. Wine always inspires me. And no, it really, truly does inspire me every night. But I think as well, words inspire me. Mm-hmm. Words are powerful, you know, whether they're written words or spoken words, and, you know, being able to create and shape stories around wines, to be able to convey the stories that you see in a glass of wine. I think, you know, that is inspiring to me.
Now, you're part of a great organization now, because the Wine Advocate, Mr. Parker retired, gave you the helm as editor-in-chief, and now it's part of a larger group, Michelin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michelin, I should say.
Michelin.
Michelin. So, phenomenal food critique, restaurant. I mean, all my life, I've seen my parents, whether we go to a one star or to a great ranked brasserie, mm-hmm. the Michelin guy was always in the car or on mm-hmm. the desk. Would you see yourself doing food too?
No.
So liquid.
No, stick to what I know. I you know, I'm in awe of, you know, what the inspectors do behind the scenes at the Michelin Guide. And, you know, it's a lot of, like we do, you know, people always say, oh, you're a wine critic. That's so wonderful. Until, you know, you have to taste 150 wines.
Yeah, it's very tiring.
But it's the same with the critics, you know, to have to go to several different restaurants every night when they're doing a city or a region, you know, and, you know, analyzing and overanalyzing and, you know, really sort of, you know, understanding this cuisine within the context, you know, it's a lot of work.
Yes.
And so, you know, although I do feel I have a very good palate, my palate is not trained to do cuisine.
Huh. Well, would you want to share a few words on this wine? Just three
Ooh, it
words.
Is a knockout. You know?
Just words. As you're so good with words.
Yeah. It's rich, it's powerful, it's spicy, it's bold, it's got energy in it, doesn't it?
It's all about you.
Is it?
Well, I really thought I wanted to bring a wine that I thought really represent who you are. And I'm, as you know, we've been knowing each other for many years now, and I love the moment we spend. And I think everybody should see who you are as you showed us. And this is fabulous to see what is behind this great, fabulous lady that came from Maine and did all this.
Oh, thank you.
Would you be willing with everyone to share your passion?
My passion?
If it's not wine, but I know you have many more than just wine, so. It could be education, it could be children.
Whether having time for it. Yeah, no, it is. Like my family, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's the first image that popped in my mind when you said that was the kids.
Yes.
My daughters, but also, you know, we've settled down here in Napa. We just bought a little farm in Carneras. We have some chickens. We have some goats. Dogs. We have dogs. We have a rabbit. It's really about family and home.
Yes.
And you know, having that grounding. We've traveled so much.
For sure.
And
from cities to big cities.
Yeah.
So you're back to the source in many ways.
Maine, yeah.
Countryside, back
it's
to
nice
the countryside.
It's nice to put down stakes and say, look, this is it. And we're going to build something here. And you know, the family has its roots here.
And you feel this is home now in Napa Valley?
Absolutely. I love
Very
it.
Very excited. Yeah.
When we were leaving Singapore, and we thought very hard about where we wanted to go. And we traveled so many places by then, and we had so many choices, Australia, New Zealand,
yes.
So many beautiful places in the world. But, you know, I just couldn't think of a place
yes.
better than Napa.
For sure. Now, passion is family. Is there a dream? Because it seems, and everybody listening is probably thinking the same way as I do, kind of achieved the dream of so many from your phenomenal history, which is great. Is there a dream that you're willing to share you have in your head that you haven't achieved yet?
Yes.
To the fact that you want to share it. Thank you. Well, so many, so share many.
No.
Dreams are the big S.
No.
Because I have so many S's in mind.
No, I would love one day to write a novel. I would love to.
Have you started? Something tells me it's going to be even before the novel, a play. Because you're so good at actors.
I like dialogue a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
I like to write dialogue. I think in
yes.
Plato's dialectic.
For sure. Yeah, the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why I would see you doing a novel. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And is the land you own inspires you to do so?
I think so. It's really a matter of time, you know.
Yeah.
It's just so many responsibilities with the reviewing, with the
yes.
editor-in-chief role, with the family, with everything. You know, it's really about sort of, I think one day I'll, maybe many years from now, I'll settle down and I'll write a book. It'll be my only book.
No, well, the first one is great too, and it's wonderful for people to be able to read it. Now, any message you want to share to everyone as the time we live in, where we are in the 21st century in 2020, any message of encouragement, any message of hope, any message that you wish to share to the world at large?
I don't know. I just, just the way that I live my life, just to be kind to everybody, to be open-minded, to be embracing, to be inclusive,
yes.
Because that's how you progress in the world. That's how we all progress.
For sure.
That's how we, learn and we develop.
Yes.
We grow stronger. But we can't do it alone. And we can't do it with people who are just like us. We need all of the wonderful differences of the world. We're going through difficult times at the moment.
Yes.
And it's hard. It's hard to watch the news nowadays.
Yes.
It's heart-wrenching sometimes. But I just think every day, just getting up and being positive and being kind to other people and being
yes.
opening and open-minded and helping wherever you can. When
yeah.
You see somebody and you're in a position to help, help.
What a message. Dear friends, what to add? Lisa is giving me shivers of inspiration, excitement, dreams. It's very true. So well said. So unusually, I'm not going to add much. I'm not going to give Lisa a French kiss today because we have to social distance.
Yes.
And her husband may short my account because he's a good bond trader. And dear friends, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's Lisa, thank you for accepting.
Thank you for having me. Like I said, I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, for sure. Why do I ask Lisa? And she said, I'm going to be done early July after the Bordeaux tasting.
Yes, just finished.
And, we delighted you moved to Napa. She is down the road and we'd love to have Lisa at some stage to come to some of our wonderful retreat to do a speech or to inspire not only ladies.
You do retreats?
We do some fun retreats.
Okay.
And, you've been such a great inspiration, Lisa. I want to thank you. So many great comments of everyone. Lisa, thank you for being who you are, for doing what you're doing, because everybody needs to know, coming after Robert Parker, Lisa is the editor-in-chief. She's the big boss. It's a very difficult position to fill on someone who founded a business, and she's doing so well and amplifying the voice of not only great wines, and at the same time, all of us from every wine region and doing such a great job at it. So, Lisa, congratulations for your audacity, your personality, your pugnacity, and your sense of entrepreneurship, because you are the example that so many of us need to follow.
Oh, thank you.
Merci beaucoup. And we won't do social. We'll do the kiss on the cheeks. Mm-hmm. Thank you, dear friends. See you soon.
Bye.